Discourse on the simile of the quail, the Latuki Kopam Sutta. Thus have I heard at one time the Lord was staying near Anguttarapa. Apana was the name of a market town in Anguttarapa. Then the Lord, having dressed in the morning, taking his pole and robe, entered Apana for alms food. When he had walked for alms food and was returning from the alms gathering, after the meal, he approached the forest thicket for the day's abiding. When he had plunged into the forest thicket, he sat down at the root of a tree for the day's abiding. And the Venerable Udin, also having dressed in the morning and taking his pole and robe, entered Apana for alms food. When he had walked for alms food and was returning from the alms gathering after the meal, he approached that the same forest thicket for the day's abiding. When he had climbed into that forest thicket, he sat down at the root of a tree for the day's abiding. Then while the Venerable Udin was in private seclusion, a reasoning arose in his mind thus, indeed our Lord is a remover of many painful things. Indeed our Lord is a bringer of many pleasant things. Indeed our Lord is a remover of many unskilled things. Indeed our Lord is a bringer of many skilled things. Then the Venerable Udin, emerging from his seclusion towards evening, approached the Lord. Having greeted the Lord, he sat down at a respectful distance. As he was sitting down at a respectful distance, the Venerable Udin spoke thus to the Lord. Then in the evening, Venerable Udin left seclusion and went to the Blessed One. On arrival, having bowed down, he said, just now, Lord, as I was alone in seclusion, this train of thought arose in my awareness. So many painful things has the Blessed One taken away from us. So many pleasant things has He brought to us. So many unskillful qualities has the Blessed One taken away from us. So many skillful qualities has He brought us. For in the past, Lord, we used to eat in the morning, in the evening, and in the day at the wrong time, the afternoon. Then there was the time when the Blessed One addressed the monks, saying, monks, please discontinue that daytime meal at the wrong time. At that time I was upset. At that time I was sad, thinking the exquisite staple and unstaple foods that faithful householders give us during the day at the wrong time, even those the Blessed One has us abandoned, even those in the will go on one has us relinquished. But out of consideration for our love and respect for the Blessed One, out of consideration for the shame and fear of wrongdoing, we abandon that daytime meal at the wrong time. Because the householders sort of prepare good food, you know, not in the morning, later on. And so when Buddha asked them to, abandon the meal at the night time, so they are going to miss that thing, and they were so upset about it. And you can remember Buddha was telling that one, this is for good health. And in another discourse, so a certain monk did not want to give up for that as well. So we ate in the evening and in the morning. Then there was the time when the Blessed One addressed the monks, saying, monks, please discontinue that evening meal at the wrong time. At the time I was upset. At the time I was sad, thinking the more exquisitely prepared for our two meals, even that Blessed One has us abandoned. Even that one will go not has us relinquished. It has happened, Lord, that a man obtaining some good curry ingredients during the day would say to his wife, put this aside and we will eat it together in the evening. All fine cooking is done in the evening and next to none during the day. But out of consideration for our love and respect for the Blessed One, out of consideration for shame and fear of wrongdoing, we abandon that evening meal at the wrong time. So it has been a bit hard to do that. It has happened, Lord, that monks wandering for alms in the pit dark of the night have walked into a waste water pool, fallen into cesspool, stumbled over thorn patch, stumbled over sleeping cow. They have encountered young hooligans on the way to or from a crime. They have been sexually propositioned by women. Once I went for alms in the pitch dark of night, a woman washing a pot saw me by lightning flash, and on seeing me screamed out, "I am done for, a demon is after me." When this was said, I said to her, "I am no demon, sister. I am a monk waiting for alms." "Then you are a monk whose daddy is dead, whose mama is dead. Better for you, monk, that your belly be slit upon a sharp butcher's knife than this prowling for alms for your belly's sake in the pitch dark of night." On recollecting that, Lord, the thought occurred to me, so many painful things has the Blessed One taken away from us, so many pleasant things has He brought us, so many unskillful qualities has the Blessed One taken away from us, so many skillful qualities has He brought us. You see, the monk was sort of blamed by other people and scolded upon, and they went to this falling into wastewater pool and all those things. All those troubles are now taken out. And they meditate at that time, and so the pleasant things are coming now. And even for if someone actually thinking about the food that you know, I have eaten in the morning, now I have to go for alms in the afternoon, and then you can't even concentrate because you got to go for that thing, and so that one is also gone. But even so, then some foolish persons here, on being told by me, "Give this up," speak thus, "But what of this trifling, insignificant matter?" This recluse lays too much emphasis on exertion, but they do not give it up, and they cause dissatisfaction to me, to be nursed against me and against those monks who desire the training. This becomes for them within a strong bond, a stout bond, a solid bond, a bond that does not rot away, a thick log of wood, within as a quail, a little hen bird, because she is caught in a trap of creepers, come to slaughter, they are or to a captivity or dying so, that within, if one should say that quail, a little hen bird, because she is caught in a trap of creepers, comes to a slaughter, they are or to captivity or dying, yet for her it is a bond of no strength, a weak bond, a bond that rots away, a pitiless bond. Would anyone speaking thus within, he speaking rightly, because that little bird is going into this bush, and then this the other things wrap around her body, and so she can't actually escape. So the people, I would say, well, although it is get trapped in those things, those are little bonds. But it's not for the little hen, because they can't actually escape from that thing, because they are strong, because see, her size is small and she's not strong enough. "No, venerable sir, that quail, a little hen bird," reverts her, "because she is caught in a trap of creepers, come to a slaughter, they are or to captivity or dying, since for her it is a strong bond, a stout bond, a solid bond, a bond that does not rot away, a thick log of wood." Even so, then, some foolish persons here, on being told by me, "Give this up," speaks thus, "But what of this trifling insignificant matter?" This recluse lays too much emphasis on exertion, and they do not give it up, they cause dissatisfaction to be nursed against me and against those monks who desire the training. This for them within a strong bond, a stout bond, a solid bond that does not rot away, a thick log of wood. So they are not going to give up because that this thing. And they also think that's the Buddha, for example, give up the meal. And what is it? This is a very simple thing. It's just a meal. Right? And I can remember there was a monk who was talking about here that long time ago. What is the big thing keeping some, you know, monks are not allowed to keep salt in the place. And what is the big thing that not allowing salt? You know, that is the craving that creates from the salt. Why do you keep salt? I want to have the taste. Right? So... So they think it is a very, you know, simple thing, and because that there was this council, Buddha, Sangha council, and in that council it was requested, can we keep salt or something, and it was rejected. But within, some young men of family here, on being told by me, give this up, speaks thus, but what of this trifling insignificant matter to be given up, and those giving up the Lord speaks to us, and of whose rejection the welfare speaks to us, and they give it up, and they do not cause dissatisfaction to be nursed against me, or against those monks who desire the training. So they sort of thinking, what is this little thing? Buddha is asking us to give up this, you know, the meal. I can give it up. Things like that. They are strong enough. These giving that up are unconcerned, unruffled, depending on others, with a mind become as a wild creatures. This for them within is a bond of no strength, a weak bond, a bond that rots away, pitiless bond. Within it is like a king's bull elephant, whose tusks are as long as plow pole, who is massive, finely bred, whose home is the battlefield, and who is bound with a stout leather bond, having easily twisted his body, having burst those bonds, tearing them asunder, go away as he pleases. Because the big elephant, you know, you can't just hold on the piece of leather with this fellow is so big, he can, you know, twist his body and go away. Now, then, if anyone should speak thus, that king's bull elephant, that and who is bound with a stout leather bond, having easily twisted his body, having burst those bonds, tearing them asunder, goes away as he pleases. Yet for him it was a strong bond, a stout bond, a solid bond, and bond that does not rot away, a thick log of wood. Would anyone speaking thus, would then be speaking rightly? No reverse. That king's bull elephant, reverse, whose tusks are long as poor hole, and who is bound with stout leather bond, having easily twisted his body, having burst those bonds, tearing them asunder, goes away as he pleases, because for him it's a bond of no strength. The elephant is strong enough to break those things. Even so, then, some young men of family here, on being told by me, give this up, speak thus. But what of this trifling insignificant matter to be given up? Of whose giving up the Lord speaks to us? And of whose rejection the welfare speaks to us? I mean, this is nothing for them. That's what they think. This is nothing for us to give up. It is very simple. And they give it up, and they do not cause dissatisfaction to be nursed against me, or against those monks who desire the train. These giving up, giving that up, are unconcerned, unruffled, depending on others, with a mind, become as a wild creatures. This is for them, then is a weak bond, bond of no strength, bond that rots away, a pitiless bond. So there are people who can't actually give up these things. They are taking these things as very strong. Some people can give up easily. And Buddha gave another example. And Udayana, it is like a man, poor, needy, destitute, who has one little temple town hole open to the crows, unlovely to see. One tumble down pallet, unlovely to see. His grain and storeroom in one jar, unlovely to see. His one wife, unlovely to see. He might see a monk in a monastery, his hands and feet properly washed, who, after eating a delicious meal, was sitting in the cool shade, intent on high thought. It might occur to him, indeed, reclusive is pleasant. Indeed, reclusive is healthy. Suppose that having cut off my hair and beard, having done saffron robes, should go forth from home into homeless. So this is a person who is living in a hut type, you know, the small hamlet thing. And he hasn't got many things, you know, the grains and all those things. It's just a jar with this thing. And then he see a monk, you know, in a place that abiding under a tree, you know, happy and seeing. So he's actually thinking that he's actually abiding nicely, and I should go and do the same. So, but he might not be able to bring himself to give up this one little tumble down hole. That is not possible. His one wife, unlovely to see, and go forth from home into homeless, having cut off his hair and beard and having done saffron robes. Now then, if anyone should speak thus, that man bound by these bonds is unable, giving up his one little tumble down oil, this one wife, unloved, see, to go forth from home into homeless, having cut off his hair and beard and having done saffron robes. Because home, it's a bond of no strength, a weak bond, a bond that trots away, pithless bond. Would anyone speak in thus? So then he speaks rightly. If someone is actually saying that it is very simple, it's a very weak bond. For them, when they see that this person is actually already suffering and living in that condition, and it will be easier for him to give up, right? And somebody actually pursues that way. I mean, someone would see that, that those people who haven't got anything, may be easy for them to give up, right? But it is not so. It is not so. So Buddha is saying that no reward, sir, the answer, that man bound by those bonds is not able to give up his one little tumble down wife and all those things, because it's a strong bond. Although he hasn't got anything, that he has got very few things, it's not possible for him to give up those things. They are the solid bonds, strong bonds. But the other way around is possible. And Buddha is saying, even so, then some foolish men, persons here, so then when they were asked to give up, they don't give up. But the other way around is, Udini, it is like a householder or his son, a rich, of great wealth, of great possessions, with a mass of abundant gold ornaments, a mass of abundant corn, mass of abundant fields, with a mass of abundant raiment, with a mass of abundant wives, a mass of abundant men slaves, women slaves. He might see a monk in a monastery. And so after washing his feet and those things, and he's meditating, and then having seen that one, this person thinks that, indeed this life is good, and I should go and, give up my things and go that one. So we would normally think that person is sort of hard to do, that the other person, poor person, is easy to give, right? But it's not so. The poor person is not happy to give up that what he got. But the rich person, because he has got quite a lot, he can give it up. Because he got plenty of that one. Because the satisfaction he find, that if you got many things, if you got one car, you might be whole into it, right? But suppose you got 100 cars, it's like toys. You don't sort of bound into that one. So if you have quite a lot, and it's the same principle that apply in the this, that the development of the mind, where you actually develop, if you see some sort of a color, right, and then you, it is the only color you see, or if the small amount of it is available, right, then one would cling to that one. But if you can make it vast, that plenty of that one, then this is nothing. So having enough of those things, it's also a thing that one can give it up. So, would one speak thus? Would then be speaking rightly? That means it's a thick bond, a strong bond. That the normal perception is that one, because the rich people are sort of, they are bound to those things. That's the normal perception. No, reverse, sir. That householder, householder's son, reverse, sir, bound by those bonds, is able to give up this mass of abandoned gold ornaments and all those home, the properties, and going to home into homeless, because for him it's a bond of no strength, a weak bond, a bond that rots away, pitless bond. Even so, then some young men of family here, on being told by me, give this up, speak thus, but what of this trifling insignificant matter to be given up, and of those giving up? And the Lord speak to us, and of whose rejection the welfare speak to us. And they gave it up, and they do not cause dissatisfaction to be nursed against me, or against those monks who desire the training. These giving that up are unconcerned, unruffled, dependent on others, with a mind become as a wild creature's. This for them, Udin, is a bond of no strength, a weak bond, a bone that rots away, a pithless bone. So we Buddha set up this condition for the the poor person and the rich person, and who would be able to give up these things. Within these four types of persons are found existing in the world. What for? As to this Udin, a certain person faring alone towards the getting rid of clinging. So his purpose is to getting rid of this, whatever the clinging is, towards the casting out of clinging. But while he is faring alone towards the getting rid of clinging, towards the casting out of clinging, memories and thoughts belonging to clinging beset him. So he is getting this, the Pali word is this sarasankappa, samudha charanti. We will look at those things a little bit. He gives into them. He does not get rid of them. He does not dispel them. He does not make an end of them. He does not send them to destruction. I would even say that this person is fettered, not unfettered. What is the reason for this? Differences in faculties in this person are known to me. So this, the word, he is trying to meditate, right? He is going to get rid of this clinging. But then he gets the memories and thoughts. Sarasankappa is that mind grasping to these objects. So, and then one would think about it, because the mind is holding to that form or things like that. It's thinking about it. So sankappa is coming. What are they? They are actually papancha. You know that papancha that we discussed in the Madhupindika Sutta before? The sannya, you get the perception categories. Those things are now assailing him. Now if you think about this, it may be a form that, you know, when you were young, that your own body. When you were young, going to school, you saw the other people, so they are bodies, they are things, they are laughing, they are talking and all those things. And so there is this form, and regarding that form, that was, let's say, past one, and then the memories are coming back. I was in such and such a place, I was in Sri Lanka, I was in that place, I visited that place. You know, if somebody is actually telling something about a place that they have visited, and all the things that is coming to your mind, and we talk about it, right? We think about it. Those things are coming in the person who is trying to meditate as well. Maybe sometimes people are aware, and sometimes people are not aware. It is happening. And so whatever the feeling at that time, it is again coming up and recalling, and I had such and such a good time. People go back to that past life and talk. If they don't get it now, they talk. And you see that the young age, whatever in those things, are sort of recalled very heavily to the mind. And so perception and all those things. And so these things are coming. So when it comes up, he's not giving it up. He's giving it to him. It's a samudha charanti. It is that they are controlling him. These thoughts, these things he thinks about the past, they are controlling him, and it exists within him. And so he's out of the meditation. He's not talking about the meditation anymore. He's thinking about those things. And here within, some person is faring alone towards the getting rid of clinging, towards the casting out of clinging. But while he is faring alone towards the getting rid of clinging, towards the casting out of clinging, memories and thoughts belonging to clinging beset him. He does not give in to them. He gets rid of them. He dispels them. He makes an end of them. He sends them to destruction. But I say that this person is also fettered. who then not unfettered. What is the reason for this? Differences in faculties in this person are known to me, Udayan. Buddha gave an example over there as well. We will look at this Madhupindika Sutta, a little bit of it. So remember that this was the Mahavarbal Mahakachana was explaining the Madhupindika Sutta, and Buddha made a statement, that brief statement, that if with regard to those cause whereby the perception and categories of complication, that is the sanya, sankha, papanya sanya sankha, assail a person, there is nothing they ask to relish. Welcome and remain fastened to. It's abhinandati abhivadati, you know that that wording over there, Pali words. Obsessions of views, obsession of uncertainty, obsession of passions, obsession of resistance, obsessions of conceit, obsession of passion for becoming, and obsessions of ignorance. That is the end of taking up the rods and bladed weapons and all those things. And the statement was expanded and explained, depending on the I and form, I consciousness arises. The meeting of the three is contact. With the contact as requisite condition, there is feeling. What one feels, what one pursues. Whatever thing we feel, we pursue. That what was the feeling. So it's like a labeling, labels in the mind. And that I had such a pleasurable feeling. What one pursues, one thinks about. If you have the perception, then you think about. So that a person who is actually thinking about something about the past coming up and thinking about, so he pursues that one, and he pursues, and then he thinks about it. What one thinks about, one complicates. Complicates here, that is, there is craving. Craving and views are formed by that one. When one thinks about those things. Based on what a person complicates, so that is that formed in his mind, the perception and categories of complication, papanya sanya sankha, assail him in her with regard to past, present and future. Forms cognizable via the eye. Similarly, ear, nose, tongue, body and mind. All those things. That he should be actually, he should see these are the past ones, the present ones and future ones. But whatever those things, he'll keep on clinging to those things, and he's getting, he has no control now. And so, Venerable Mahakachana explained, when there is the I, when there are forms, when there is I consciousness, it is possible that one will delineate a delineation of contact. When there is a delineation of contact, it is possible that one will delineate a delineation of feeling. When there is a delineation of feeling, it is possible that one will delineate a delineation of perception. So all those things are happening. Because there is this I, and there is this form. If there was no there, none of them are there. And then contact would not have arisen. Feeling would not have been arisen. So he actually traces in the mind, make a mental picture. It's not the if you see a person, it's not the person actually you are perceiving at that time. If you are really perceiving that about that person, that means you are actually perceiving these 32 parts, the disgusting thing. You are perceiving something that you made up from your own mind about the feelings, perception and that you had before, and it is sort of come to the front and make your own picture. So the Venerable Mahakachana went on that one, and it's just a when there is this delineation of perception, it is possible that one will delineate the delineation of thinking. So the thinking is coming because of this perception. And when there is this thinking, then one would be assailed by perception and categories of complication, those views. In the papancha is this craving and views. Those things are assailing him. So whatever the views, you know, the craving is happening with the sensual desire and all those things. And then the views are the mind making, you know, this is mine and so on. So those things are assailing him. And so if this is happening, then one will recognize the manifestation of sensory impingements. You know, what are the impingements over here? And if we do not do it, and if there is no eye, no ear, and when there is no eye, when there are no forms, then there is no eye consciousness. It is impossible that one will delineate a delineation of a contact. If those two are not there, it's not the perception and all those things are not coming up. So, it is important to get that one into the picture when you are reading that part of the discourse. And some person here within is faring alone towards the getting rid of clinging, towards the casting out of clinging. While he is faring alone towards the getting rid of clinging, towards the casting out of clinging, the confusion in mindfulness, memories and thoughts belong to clinging at times besetting. Slow within is the arising of mindfulness. And then he gets rid of it quickly, dispels it, makes an end of it, sends to destruction. Within it is as if a man were to let two or three drops of water fall into an iron pot that had been heated all day long. Slow within is the falling of the drop of water, but they would be quickly destroyed and consumed. If you have a red hot iron plate, and if you put a water drop, you know, drop of water, and slowly, you know, one drop and so on, then it will very quickly disappear, evaporate. But the mindfulness also, like the water drops are coming slowly, the mindfulness for this person, slow is the arising of mindfulness. For example, if somebody meditate and then he actually see that his birth is suffering, aging is suffering, and contemplate, and then go on shopping. And you see someone, you know, the beautiful person or something, and then you are a beautiful cloth or something in a shop, right? And then you are gone with that object. You are going this way, but the cloth is there and the mind is holding to that thing. But later on, maybe you are going to hit somebody or something, and then you might realize, well, I was not mindful. And the meditation part may be coming up for what I am doing. So it's slowly arising to him. But as soon as it arises, he gets rid of it very quickly from the mind. Even so, then some person here is faring alone towards the getting rid of clinging, towards the casting out of clinging, while he is faring alone towards the getting rid of clinging, towards the casting out of clinging, from confusion in mindfulness, memories and thoughts belong to clinging at times beset him. Slow then is the arising of mindfulness. Then he gets rid of it quickly, dispels it, makes an end of it, sends it to destruction. Ayudin say that this person is also fettered. Not unfettered. What is the reason for this? Differences in faculties in this person are known to me. Buddha knows that this person has such and such faculties. But some person here within thinking clinging is the root of anguish. He knows that this is the suffering. If I have the clinging, then I'm done with it. I'm going to, you know, the hell, animal realm, and all those things can happen. Okay, and having understood it so, he is without clinging, freed by the destruction of clinging. Ayudin say that this person is unfettered, not fettered. What is the reason for this? Differences, faculties in this person are known to him. So that's the only third person is the one who is not having these fetters. There are these five strands of sense pleasures, Sudhi. What five? Material shapes, cognizable by the eye. Agreeable, pleasant, liked, enticing, connected with sensual pleasures, alluring, and sounds, and smell, taste, touches, and agreeable, pleasant, liked, enticing, connected with sensual pleasures. So we can see these five strands of sense pleasures, where we see forms that are, you know, beautiful objects, and the sounds, and so on. Whatever happiness, whatever joy within arises in consequence of these five strands of sense pleasures, It is called happiness of sense pleasures, that is a vile happiness. The happiness of an average person, an unearned happiness, it should not be pursued, developed or made much of. I say of this happiness that it is to be feared. That sensual pleasures happiness, Buddha is saying, these are vile. Sometimes Buddha used this gama. Happiness of average person, that is got to be feared. In this connection within, a monk, aloof from the pleasures of the senses, aloof from unskilled states of the mind, enters and abides in the first jhana, which is accompanied by initial thought and discursive thought, is born of aloofness and is rapturous and joyful. So that's the first jhana concentration. Vivicheva kami, vichakusale dhammi, savitakkan, savicharam, vivekadam, prithisutam, pratamatyanam, upasampajya, viharati, Pali. So that is that he is meditating, that he want to get rid of this, he understand this sensual desire. If you follow the previous sentence, the Buddha saying these sensual pleasures are sort of a wild happiness that should not be pursued. And so when Buddha said that it should be feared for a monk, you know, who has the faith about Buddha, he really believe, right? And no doubt about it. And so having known that one, then so sensual pleasures are bad for me, and then he won't have the thought of renunciation and thought of non-malevolence, thought of non-harming, those things. So he has this initial thought is that I should give up the sensual pleasures, I should develop the renunciation, thought of renunciation. So he is going into the first jhana concentration with that one. When he go to the first jhana concentration, he get the rapture, the pleasure that arising in the body, you know, flows through, that he is happy. Now there is a issue with that rapture. There is these two things over there. One is preeti, is the bodily pleasure, and then there is sukha, is the mental pleasure. So there is this initial application and sustained application that he need to keep on thinking that I want to give up these things, sensual desires, you know, the renunciation is better for me. It's like a, you know, thing in his mind, keep on applying it. So that keep on applying that one is a gross thing, because I have to do something to arrive at this pleasure, this rapture. If I don't do it, then I don't get it. So, because of this, that he want to get rid of this the initial application and sustained application. So, it's by allaying initial and discursive thoughts with the mind subsequently tranquilized and fixed on one point, he enters and abides in the second meditation, which is devoid of initial and discursive thought, is born of concentration and is rapturous and joyful. So, you can see that so he arrived at the second jhana concentration. Now he doesn't have to think about I'm going to give up the sensual pleasures and all those things, because he has done it for long enough. And so it's just wheel rolling type thing. There's a concentration. Because of the concentration, he gets the rapture with that. Now
but the thing is, the person who is doing the first jhana level, he has to keep continuing it until his the concentration level is up to the level to the second jhana level.
Yes.
Until that, he has to continue.
He has to do it.
But if he has a wish, I want to get it up, but he cannot do that because his concentration level is not up to the level. He should be in the second jhana.
Yeah, for such a person, if he actually stop that initial application and sustained application, his rapture is stopping as well.
Yes.
All those things are stopping because he hasn't arrived at a concentration that is strong enough to have this rapture and happiness pleasure without the initial application and sustained application. That is because you have to do it for a long time before you arrive at that one.
What is exactly initial
vichara? Yeah. The vitakka vichara is the thought of renunciation, thought of non-harming, thought of non-malevolence.
those are the thoughts, so you keep on applying those thoughts. So, yeah, yes.
In meditation, how can you make it?
Well, it's happening with the right view. It is happening because that you actually, your meditation object become either the suffering. Birth is suffering, aging is suffering, sickness is suffering. So when you think about this suffering, then you examine why is this suffering come to arise. So then you actually see this, according to Samadhi Bhavana Sutta, for example, you would see that this many suffering is happening because of my craving, craving for sensual desire, right? So then naturally it come to that his mind, I have this suffering, suffering in the past, suffering now, suffering for the future, all those suffering are caused by this sensual desire as a one thing. So I don't want this sensual desire. So he keep on applying his mind because of this problem that I'm having and I'm going to have, I don't want to have this one. So therefore I want, better for me to renounce these things, better for me to renounce this thing. It is coming up whenever he apply his mind to the suffering nature. Oh, it could be that these 32 parts of the body, so he's mindful about the 32 parts of the body and he keeps on applying the 32 parts of the body and this is this hair of the body and so on. So while he is doing that one, then he finds that there's nothing in this body that I can take as mine and valuable over here. It's a disgusting thing. Because of that one, he is also doing the same thing in a different way. Either vipassana or this samatha, the tranquility, meditation, one of them will take in that way. Long time in the sense that before arriving at the second jhana level, you would maintain the first jhana concentration, let's say a couple of months or something like that. It depends on the person. If somebody maybe having done these things before, when one arises, the other one may be very quick. I can remember when I meditated, when I got the first rapture, I was not actually paying attention to it, but I felt that I had that one, and I was continuing in the meditation. And after the meditation, I sort of think, that was really good. Really good, I never had this experience before. And the next day, when I want to meditate, well, I want it, right? So I was thinking, is it coming or is it coming? It didn't come for 1 month for me, for the people. Until I forget about that rapture. I forgot the complete rapture, I left the rapture, I was now concentrating on the meditation. Then it is coming back again, right? So the rapture, when it comes first time, it is a very simple tinkle type thing in the head or somewhere. You are so happy, you have never experienced before. And then it grows. And there is a time where the rapture is, your whole body is filled up with the rapture. You with the rapture you pursue, well, it's over here now, it's over here now, it's over here now, it's over here now. Wherever you focus your mind, the rapture is there. So you come to that sort of a level. So you can, that's what the last week also we discussed this one. You can pervade the whole body with the rapture. So you are so happy that it is a skill. So you don't need to go into that level to arrive at the second jhana concentration. But if you keep on meditating about the Eightfold Path, these are automatic. Because your focus is not about the rapture. Your focus is not about the jhana. Your focus is to attain Nibbana, so it takes you completely, first, second, third, fourth, you do not know sometimes, and you actually, after the meditation and in the meditation, you actually felt, well, this is really good, but you do not cling into that one because you are trying to get rid of it. But to know that one, to reach that, you need to meditate quite strongly about suffering nature. Unless you feel, you see the suffering nature, you are not happy to give up anything.
So when you are meditating, are you aware of certain jhana levels?
I can. Now I can say where I am, you know, which level I am in, which level I am falling, and sometimes I can jump up and down as well to 4 to 5, 5 to 4 sort of thing. It's just another skill. So it takes quite a lot of time to do that one. That it is not the aim. Aim is to go in this Nibbana, whatever jhana you have. Even the first jhana is good enough to attain, you know, the three mental level and so on. It is possible. But if you put your target as the, you know, Nibbana, and all those steps, you know, you are getting them as a byproduct. You are not paying attention. But occasionally you cling. Occasionally you cling to those things because that, it's like, you know, you used to eat something, and if you don't eat that day, then you have something in you. So if you are in the meditation, if you don't get it for some reason, then you are thinking, oh, what happened? You know, and then you check your hindrances and things, and you see that this is the problem, and then you come back to it. So it's like a step every day that you are climbing. And when you got that, and then in certain times you go into this high concentration very quickly, get the rapture, ceases the rapture, and then the pleasure, and the pleasure ceases, then equanimity, you can arrive very quickly. So we were talking about the second jhana concentration over here, and then in the second jhana concentration there is this priti, you know, the priti sambojjhanga, that is the bodily pleasure, and one would think that one would be clinging to that one. There is sort of a clinging nature to a certain extent into that, and it's not like a clinging to sensual pleasures. There is no this raga anusa, you know, that sort of thing for that, but there can be clinging. It's a lower before the last level. So since you see that this there can be clinging to that one, you want to get rid of that clinging. So you don't want that priti. So then you go into this the third level of the concentration, and there is this equanimity. So why you want to get the equanimity, you are mindful about this rapture. Rapture is problematic. Rapture is for a beginner it is a so valuable thing, but later on you can see when it is flowing through the whole body, you don't want to have it because it's troublesome for the meditation. You become tired, sort of thing. So he has this sampajana, the mindfulness, and the sampajana and mindfulness, and there he is going into the equanimity with the pleasurable level. And since there is this pleasure in the third jhana level, there is this something called asati. That is this not having the mindfulness, proper mindfulness. Because you see there's a pleasure. When there is pleasure, we are happy. We don't see the world properly in that one. Because the suffering nature is now not there for him. He does not perceive the suffering. Where is the suffering now when I'm pleasurable? All right?
That means we don't do that in the future.
No, vitakvichara was stopped in the second jhana level. This is we are talking about the third jhana level. He said having the concentration. And there is this lack of mindfulness. The mindfulness is there compared to the first jhana and the second jhana. It's quite vast over here. But if you compare it to the next level, the equanimity level, there is no mindfulness. You know, it's not very... not complete in that sense.
That means that person is not pursuing it?
No, he is pursuing the pleasure. He is pursuing the pleasure, and because it's like a wheel, you know, you turn, you know, rotate it and then send it in a direction, it is now rolling with this momentum. So initial application, sustained application was there before, like in the background before, right? Now, if you spread the loving kindness, for example, for a long time, you get into this state easily. If you do that one for a long time, and you need to do quite a lot on that. It's not just let there be free from suffering, you know, for 1 second or 2 seconds like that. If you maintain, a bit hard.
How do you get a place away in this effect, sir? When it is upekkha, so...
No, this is not the complete upekkha over here. So it is that the halfway through. Why he is actually getting upekkha over here? Because he is now paying attention to this rapture is bad for me. So that when you have the rapture, you have the pleasure as well. Now, you are thinking rapture is troublesome for me, is bad for me. I don't want the rapture. So you get the pleasure without the rapture. Always you have the pleasure. Whenever you have the rapture, you have the pleasure. Now you are happy not to have the rapture, but to have the pleasure. So there is this equanimity, because he is aware that having rapture is bad for me. That was his awareness. So now, because of this asati thing, he is going into the fourth jhana concentration, that he does not want this one. You see, the pleasure and joy lead to unmindfulness, and cessation of that one leads to mindfulness. And there's a pain and grief, you know, in the bodily pain and grief, and it leads to unawareness. And if cessation is leading to the awareness, so he's mindfulness aware in the fourth jhana, where he got rid of the four things. That it is that he got rid of the pleasure and the displeasure, and the physical one and the mental one, both are gone. So therefore he is a very stable position in that point. Now after the fourth dhana, Buddha said that this is called the happiness of renunciation, the happiness of aloofness, the happiness of tranquility, the happiness of self-awakening. It should be pursued, developed and made much of. I say of this happiness that is not to be feared. The sensual pleasures, Buddha said, it is something to be feared. And this one, not to be feared. Do not afraid of this one. Even it can, you can go into the clinging state. This is okay, because if you die, you will be born in a, you know, the Brahma world, nowhere else. The other one is taking down. So as to this, then a monk aloof from pleasures of the senses enters and abides in the first meditation, which is rapturous and joyful. I say this is in the unstable. The first jhana is unstable. Why? Because he has to contemplate the initial application and sustained application, has to maintain all the time. So Buddha said, and what is the unstable there? That very initial and discursive thought, that it is not stopped there. So that is the unstability. This is the unstable there. As to this, so then a monk, by allaying initial and discursive thought, enters and abides in the second meditation, which is rapturous and joyful. I would then say that this too is unstable. And what is in the unstable there? That very rapture and joy that are not stopped there. These are in the unstable there. The rapture is the problem in the second jhana. As to this, Sudhin, a monk, by fading away rapture, dealing with equanimity, attentive and clearly conscious, and enters and abides in the third meditation, I would then say that this too is unstable. And what is the unstable there? That very happiness in equanimity that is not stopped there, this is the unstable. That happiness was there, pleasure was there. And as to this, Sudhina, monk, getting rid of the happiness and by getting rid of anguish, enters and abides in the fourth meditation, which is entirely purified by equanimity and mindfulness. I would then say that this is the stable, because now there is no place to fall, because the pleasure is gone. Sukhasacha pahana, dukkasacha pahana. Pleasure is gone and the pain is gone. And the mentally and physically, both. So four things are gone and he is in the stable. As to this, Sudhin, a monk aloof from pleasures of the senses enters and abides in the first meditation, which is rapture. I would then say, this is not enough. I say, get rid of it. I say, transcend it. Buddha is first sending someone to the first jhana concentration rather than the sensual pleasures. Get rid of the sensual pleasures, go into the first jhana. Afraid of the sensual pleasures, you should be fear about that one, and the first jhana is fine. And then when he arrived at that state, Buddha said, this is not enough, get rid of it. And what are the, you know, is it transcending? As to the Sudin, a monk, by allaying initial and discursive thoughts, enters and abides in the second meditation. This is its transcending. But Udina again say, this is not enough. I say, get rid of it. I say, transcend it. So from the first one, they transcend to the second one. Having transcended to the second one, and Buddha said, now get rid of it. Like it's like this, we are telling a small child, go to the great one. And he mastered that one, go to great two, like that. Buddha is sending us to the each along the way to you know, the other jhanas. And what is it transcending? As to the Sudini, I am a monk, by fading out of rapture, enters and abides in the third meditation. This is his transcending. From the second one, transcending to the third meditation. And Udini again say, this is not enough. I say, get rid of it. I say, transcend it. And what is it transcending? As to the Sudini, a monk, by getting rid of happiness, enters and abides in the fourth meditation. This is transcending. But I, Udini, again say, this is not enough. Get rid of it. Transcending. So Buddha is saying, going from the fourth to the fifth one. What is it transcend to? As to the Sudina, a monk, by wholly transcending perception of material shapes, by the going down of perception due to sensory impressions, by not attending to perception of variety, thinking ether is unending, enters and abides in the plane of infinite ether. This is transcending. But I then say, this is not enough. I say, get rid of it. I say, transcend it. And what is it transcending? As to this, within a monk, by wholly transcend the plane of infinite ether, thinking consciousness is unending, enters and abides in the plane of infinite consciousness. This is transcending. So the fourth jhana level, that there was these forms, material things he was perceiving. He has the equanimity, but there is equanimity regarding the form, whatever form. Sound, smell, taste, and so there are five kind of equanimity. Buddha is saying that there is one better than this one. That is, there is one perception compared to five here. That is, the space is infinite. So he is perceiving only space is infinite. And then having reached that one, Buddha said, get rid of it. Go into the next one. That is, the transcend to sixth consciousness is infinite. But I would then again say, this is not enough. I say, get rid of it. I say, transcend it. And what is this transcending? As to the Sudhin monk, by wholly transcending the plane of infinite consciousness, thinking there is not anything, there is nothing. And enter into plane of nothing. This it is transcending. But I would then say, again say, this is not enough. Get rid of it. So he is transcending to the whole transcending the plane of nothing, enters and abides the plane of neither perception nor non-perception. This is its transcending. But within again, say, this is, so he went to the eighth jhana level. Now Buddha said, transcend that one, answer. I say, get rid of it. I say, transcend it. And what is it transcending? As to the Sudin, a monk, by wholly transcending the plane of neither perception nor non-perception, enters and abides in the stopping of perception and feeling. Nirodha Samapatti. This is its transcending. It is for this that I, Udina, speak even of the getting rid of the plane of neither perception and perception. Now do you, Udina, see any fetter, minute or massive, of the getting rid of which I have not spoken to you? See, the alms food was the story, right? People can't give them the meal. And Buddha is saying, give it up, because there is something better for you. Going from jhana to jhana, concentrations, even reaching the eighth one, Buddha is saying, give it up, going to the cessation of feeling and perception, which is the most, you know, the beautiful thing in that, you know, out of this, all these lines. And so Buddha is asking us to get rid of whatever thing, because there is a better one that we should be reaching. So no words. Thus spoke the Lord, delighted the Venerable Udi, rejoices in what the Lord said. So this was the discourse about the...
Sir, the stopping perception is
Nirodha Samapatti, yes.
What happens at that level?
At that level, there is no perception. There is no feeling. So it's like, you know, that...
Only a contact.
No, no, there is no contact. No contact either. If there is contact, there is this perception and all those things happening. Nothing. In the 8th jhana level, neither perception nor non-perception level, he is living with the remainder of the volitional formation. No further volitions over there. He is not constructing anything. But he is aware of that one. Because neither perception nor non-perception. This is in a sort of that state. You see, when you meditate, keep on going to the higher concentration level. First you get these thoughts about the initial thoughts and the thought of renunciation and so on. And latter state, you get sort of this perception, it's like a broken perception. They are not fully comprehended things. It's just, that the piece of papers running around like that one, that you can't even notice any letter, something like that. That you get perception that makes no sense. It's just, popping up and going, and you are not trying to pursue them. So, in the neither perception, when the cessation of feeling and perception comes in, it's not getting those things either. So, this the Nibbana, attaining Nibbana while living. So, the only thing over here, this is constructed by the person who is meditating. He constructed, he attained to this state and staying there for 7 days, 1 hour, whatever hours he actually set aside to do. So, after that one, he getting out of it. Then these thoughts come to him, and then the initial verbal actions come to him, and so on, when it ceases.
At that time, does it mean that person has attained the all the state? So,
eight jhana concentration.
Yeah?
Yes, yes.
Okay, there's no way that he is, when he comes to the real world, after the meditation, that he would be changed. He would cling to anything.
Oh, no. You can't say that one, because it's possible for even a never returner to attain the neither perception nor non-perception. The cessation of feeling and perception, if you have a concentrated state. Only the arahant, when they come back, has no clinging whatsoever.
Yeah, the people always have a
possibility. Yes.
So that means they haven't developed the wisdom to that level.
That's right. Yeah, they haven't got rid of the five higher fetters for a never return. I mean, I haven't seen anything that says that anyone other than a never returner. Normally, arahants attain this state. Mm-hmm. And other qualification is sort of a never returner, sort of can go into that state. And I haven't heard anything that says that anybody other than a never returner can attain it.
When you said that from the third jhana to fourth jhana, that you have only the
pleasure.
Yeah, pleasure and the
equanimity. No, pleasure and the equanimity.
Equanimity.
Yes.
And then, but you said that you don't, but you are still aware of the bodily pain and
everything. No. If the first jhana has got the bodily pain is for the sensual desire person, when he is pursuing the sensual thing. When you go into the first jhana, you get rid of the bodily pain, and he got the physical happiness. Right? As compared to the bodily pain, there is physical happiness. And so you don't like the physical happiness. First you don't like the initial application, sustained application, vitakka vichara. So you go into the second dhyana. And still you have the bodily, physical happiness and the mental pleasure. And in the third jhana concentration, you don't like the physical happiness, therefore you go to do the physical happiness while remain in the pleasure, born out of concentration. And he has got the equanimity. We're not very strong, not very strong compared to the fourth jhana. He got the equanimity because that he was thinking about this, the rapture is, I can cling to the rapture. You see, this is the scenario where a person who is abiding with the sensual pleasures normally and having heard Dhamma, then he would actually think sensual pleasures are bad for me. Therefore, I go into this one. Likewise, this person now in the second jhana level thinking this rapture is bad for me. I want to get rid of it. So he's going to the third with the pleasure.
So that means he's applying at that time
awareness.
The Dhamma paths. So
yes, yes.
A, sort of a, maybe Dhammacakkhara or something like that.
Something is there. He is not applying that the initial application, sustained application to the getting rid of sensual desire. Yeah. He has gone out of that one. But this, the perception that this is suffering, it should be there. The perception about this one is there. Otherwise, you don't maintain any of these things. The view, whatever the view that you have developed, you know, before the meditation, you develop some sort of view by hearing from the Buddha, right? And then you are maintaining in the meditation, even in the first jhana concentration. So you go smoother and smoother to this level, still you have that suffering thing. But because of the pleasure, you don't see it pure in the pure way.
So that means a person who doesn't know about Dhamma cannot go beyond some of the jhana levels. Because you have to apply Dhamma to go to the next level, isn't it?
In the Vipassana way, yes.
Yes.
But the other methods are there. That, for example, kasina meditations that you... From the kasina. That is that the ability to concentrate, you know, the focus on something and make it bigger and vast. Basically, those people should have less sense pleasures, you know, sense desires about those things. Otherwise, they can't do that on either. Because would you concentrate on a piece of paper or on a bit of pot of sort of a clay while you think that, you know, I can have a nice meal or, you know, something?
That means in the Lord Buddha who first realized all these Dhamma passes, you know, the, whatever the material things and everything, you know,
Dhatu, you mean?
Yeah.
Those analysis,
yeah.
Analytical ones, yes. Yeah, they are from Buddha. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the others couldn't see that at all at that time.
I suppose this 32 parts probably, I mean one can see hair of the body and sort of thing, and I could have been there to a certain level, I think. Yeah. Okay, we'll stop for today then.